Jones Gallagher. Hopefully, this will be a first in a series of meetings that we can have. Maybe sticking my neck out there, but it'll be a long stick out, okay? First thing I think we ought to do is I think we ought to all move our chairs in a little closer, where we can be a little closer to one another. When I was promoting this event, I called it Emma Jones Gallagher's Fireside Chat. So we can be a little closer that way so that we can be a little bit more of a smaller group. This meeting today is the culmination of a lot of events and a lot of people that were involved. First of all, I want to thank Joe Douglas and Dan Ross of the Pinewood Park Apartments and the Pinewood Park Learning Center for allowing us to use their facility. Let me tell you that Nan did the lion's share of putting the refreshments together.
Amen.
He really bailed me out there. Today we have Hailey Flournoy with us, and Hailey worked here before Nan took over at the Pinewood Park Learning Center. As I handed out flyers this morning, a whole lot of people were really glad that Hailey was going to be here today. So they're going to have a good visit. Also, finally, I want to thank Carol Riggs. Carol Riggs is the president of our Angelina County Historical Commission for her support in helping get this together. And finally, the major credit goes to Betty Kennedy. Betty let us know in a meeting one time over at TXU that she had a relative that had taught school at Manning. And we keyed in on that, and we were hoping to bring Emma down this weekend for the Manning reunion, and it turned out that Emma came down on her own. So tomorrow is the Manning sawmill reunion. Hailey's family has been involved in keeping that together. As a matter of fact, if you check the new handbook of Texas, you'll find that the Morgan Flournoy family is listed in there as having kept that sawmill reunion alive all this time since 1936. Finally, we want to thank Emma for coming. Emma Jones Gallagher was a resident of Lufkin from the best I can tell, and she'll fill me in on this a little better. Right before World War I, she lived with Betty's father, Will Ingram, and she would go to school in the school year here and go back in the summers to Arkansas to live. She also was a teacher and in the Black Sawmill School at Manning. And we want to thank her so much for coming to meet us today. And now I'm going to turn the program over to Hailey Flournoy. Thank you so much.
I want to introduce the esteemed Reverend Betty Kennedy. She is going to give us a little historical background to bring us up to the point where Ms. Gallagher can take over in telling us the story. Okay. So if you'll fill in for us.
I'm going to stand and tell you the history of my family, which is Emma's family. Our great-grandfather always said we came from Africa to Jamaica, from Jamaica to Georgia, from Georgia to Texas, up at Winona, near Tyler, Texas, and that's part of our roots. I made a little sketch of that, as he had told us, and I wrote a little poem, and it says like this: from the shores of Africa to the island of Jamaica, to the auction blocks of Georgia, to the plain hills of East Texas, to freedom, to voting, to education, to moving all over this great country, to making a difference, to being somebody. May the dreams and hopes of our heritage live forever. And my heritage is your heritage too. We're going to share in on some very valuable information, because as we talked this morning, I learned an awful lot, and she certainly is a wealth of knowledge. And it has been arranged by the Almighty God that she is here and is very knowledgeable as she is. There were 12 children in the Ingram family. That journey from Georgia to Texas was a long journey. You can imagine walking that distance, but there were no cars or airplanes. They did have ox-driven carts, ox-driven wagons. The large wagons carried the large pieces of goods that they were bringing. They had furniture on those big wagons. The smaller wagons carried smaller items, maybe quilts or boxes or things. The women walked along with the ox-driven carts, wagons, and when they got tired, then they would ride. Such a long journey for them to take. As they came from Georgia to Texas, they looked at the soil to see the texture of the soil and where to settle because farming was their major industry. We wore the name of Ingram because the master that brought us here were Ingrams. There were 300 acres of land up in Kilgore, Winona, Tyler area, in which that's where they settled. They remained there to the Emancipation Proclamation. Our story goes that Stalin Ingram, who was our grandfather, lived in that area with his 12 children. And there was another brother who came on that train, that wagon that they traveled with. It was 100 wagons now, and they were on one of the wagons or two of the wagons that carried the load. And they didn't know what happened to Dave. Well, Dave came to Lincoln. He was a preacher, so I'm the second preacher in the family. So he came to this area.
$75 a month. I worked 1 year because I stayed out of school one year because of my mother was getting older and not younger. And with the work that she was doing, it was hard on her. So I got out of school a year earlier and took a job at Erie.
What part did you go? When did you go to Texas College entirely?
Well, my...
After you left her, you had to Texas
College. Then I went to Texas College at Tower. We are all the CME Methodist people.
That's important.
And we thought we had to go and hold the school up, especially the Methodist children. Although it was a good school, it is a good school, and I learned, had extracurricular. I took basketball, tennis, because I wasn't a smart, limber girl. I was a stiff girl. But I took those courses because they were available. And I wanted to take them back into my hometown, which is a sawmill town, and not very good schools. So I took the tennis, and also,
I want you to share also the singing. She spent time to teach Daddy how to sing, Will Ingram how to sing. He sang tenor, and you taught him to sing.
Oh, yes.
The children don't know much about this kind of singing.
In Southern Town, we didn't have many pianos there to play music with, but there were not any musicians to teach the music with. But they taught the music by notes. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do were the notes that you played. And you could give any of the people that were taking this a book that never heard the music before, and that tune, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And they would sing this song. We started the CME Church down there on the
Lane Street.
Yes, Lane. Yeah. We taught the people to sing without pianos, without music. Well, that was our sort of music. And we taught the people to sing. And my Sunday evenings, that after church, we would get in a room there with my uncle, and he was learning. I was his teacher, just a little about, I guess about 11 years old, and I taught Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do in the black churches in Lufkin. Because the Baptist churches would also meet in the evening for us to start to learn songs. And my uncle was a bassist, but he had to teach a man to learn tenor. So he would naturally hike his voice and sing and learn the song to sing. We had a convocation every Sunday and meet at different churches and have these songs. And the best singers, the most songs that you had learned, and they were taught without a lot, too many wrong numbers. Not that anybody would know the difference because they didn't know too much about Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. Well, the CME Church, and what was the name of that church?
Long's Chapel.
Long's Chapel took all of the gifts home because Long's Chapel would know the song. They had a teacher to teach them Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do.
And I'd like you to point out one thing about your mother. This was unusual to me, that she could carry a load of clothes on her head and in her both arms and walk barefooted to deliver them or to pick them up.
Yes.
She was a laundress, washed.
And I said she was a widow, rearing three children, one boy and two girls. I was the elder girl, and my sister was 2 years younger.
And still living at the age of 92. And when, when she carried clothes on,
oh, yeah,
got the laundry in.
Well, you mentioned something about the place where they were supposed to come from. And I always would tell my mama she was a Jamaican. And she didn't like it. And she would ask me, how would I know she was a Jamaican? Then I would tell her, show her in my book how Jamaicans live. She could carry heavy loads on her head. And then heavy loads on two arms. At that time, we didn't have cars to carry them. The people that had the clothing laundries did not have cars either. So my mother had to get the work done. She had to have the money. She had to take care of her family. So she had to have the money. So she saw that the clothes were at home. And if it was people close together, she would put two and three bundles, fix it on her head, and one at each arm, and bring them home. You see her coming, walking without any shoes on, and walking fast, not dragging like we drag now. Walking, and half the time running because she had kids at home, and she didn't know what they were doing. She had to try to get home like them.
Let me point out one other thing that was unique about her story is that she had irons. These were smoothing irons that had to be heated on the fire, and they were different weights for different children. The irons that you had heated there to iron the clothes, each iron was a different weight for each of the children to use. So the younger children used a different weight of iron.
But I saw one of those irons at your house.
And we could have brought it.
Smoothing iron. And you could heat it on a stove, or you could make your fire outdoors and heat, put them all in rows and keep them there.
Okay. What is it? Can you compare the lifestyle between living in Arkansas and Texas? What is the difference when you come to Texas from that when you lived in Arkansas?
Well, the difference with that know anything about was it was a man in the homes where I came to Lufkin. But we had no man in Arkansas. My mom's mother didn't matter again because she said, I have two girls to rear and I don't want a strange man in the house.
Amen.
So she gave up her marriage life to take care of her family. And she did a good job. She tried to educate all of us. My brother was very, very smart. He was, but he had problems, and he was ashamed of it. In the first place, he stammered. In the second place, he had falling out spells. And when he'd go places, he'd be all afraid that something would happen, and he would have to be taken home. Because out.
And this brother was named Willie Jones after Will Ingram. Will Ingram's name is Willie Ingram, and she named her son after Willie Ingram. We find that there are six persons in our family that was named after him, Willie Ingram. I have a daughter that's named Willette, so I dressed it up with his name, Willie. What are some of the things as a schoolgirl that you did? I think that would interest these young girls as a school young lady. Now you're in school, could be high school, could be in elementary school. Mention some of the games you played or some of the activities you did. That is certainly different from the activities that the youngsters are doing today.
You didn't ask the difference between Texas school
and Arkansas.
When I then left it. We had games, we had rooms to have our different programs in, and it's closer to home. But in in Stamps, we had nothing. Our games, we made them and played them ourselves. If we were sent to hear one or see one, or some teacher came in and talked about basketball, and then educate us on basketball, Papa Hamlin, and we've started playing basketball. We've had nothing but the city had nothing to give to all the students. The state had a little something, but small town, especially sawmill town, got nothing. But we had to have some culture in the way. We made them. I know my brother made a flying jenny, we called it then. Then I called flying jenny, they're called. What, merry-go-round? We would pay the boys pins, safety pins, and straight pins to let us ride the merry-go-round, flying jenny. They were made, we got hurt like they get hurt now. They didn't get hurt anymore. Then they get hurt now. You get a bigger number now of them getting killed and hurt for life.
Emma, let me share this with you. I came to live with Daddy in 1934. I was adopted in 34, so 32 was when I first came to this area. Some of the things that I found in that time frame, compared to the time frame that you lived with him, which maybe have been 25 years before I came, we found that we ran into things where blacks were not allowed to go to town, but on very certain days. And we've run across this story in many places. And I began to think in my mind, maybe why we had the freedom of going to and fro in town is because Daddy built houses for all people here, not only for black people, but for white people too. So it gave him a status, do you think?
Okay. Well, he could do other things than build a house. He could build cabinets in a house where you had to have cabinet builders come in and pay them an extra job to build the cabinets. So Will Ingram had more to offer the people. And then he was closer when he built a house for you to give Dougal the extra things that you'd have to call other workers in to do.
The electrician.
Yes. Now, one thing happened in Lufkin, I never have worked it out. And that is, at one time the black folks could not go to town. Something happened. And only what I got, what my uncle wanted me to get. He didn't give us the little things that I should have gotten. He gave me the big things. And he could always go downtown anytime regardless what color he was. They made a difference in it. And it could have been the work that he did for them, or it could have been, he was a lovable person, and he respected you, whether you were black or white, for the right, he was respectful for you. He would even, if somebody had to go to town and were not allowed there, he could take them. And it didn't swell his head in it. I guess it's a sin for me to wish he was living there. He would be a lot of help to our boys and girls that we have today. Not only do we have them in cities, we have them in small towns and in little towns like Stamps, sawmill town. Same kind of people doing the same thing, not regardless of color.
When you got the job in the sawmill community, was it because of prestige that Will Ingram had in this community, or was it because you were selected? Were you in a one-room, a two-room school, or how many students did you have? Can you remember any of that?
Oh, yes. I'll always remember that. I had children from first grade
was
to 12th grade. And even if a mother had to go off, I had to babysit sometimes with a child laying up on my desk to give that mother a chance to go to a city from sawmill town, from urine. Well,
how many children were in your class?
some class had 12, some less, some more, just like they have now. But Urine was a minute's people lived there, but they had a lot of children. People, I can't say people have more children then than they do now, because I have been in some places where one family had 9, 8 or 9 children, just like the Ingram family.
Yeah.
The Ingram family, 8 and 9 and 12 children in a family. So the teacher had to do a lot of things besides teaching and taking care of the other children. The older children didn't give trouble, children giving them. Children of working teachers there, kindergarten. And then I just don't know why. We're not giving enough love, I guess, the parents. I don't have much time. Got to work and buy the children things for the clothing or for a party, when at that time you had no parties. And everybody whipped everybody's child. The teacher came with which I some children now.
What are some of the subjects that you taught? What are some of the subjects you taught?
Well, I taught from the first grade.
I mean, like math, reading.
Yes, well, the math didn't come in until later. But you have a time trying to teach the children, first grade children, how to read first. And they had to teach them to read before they even could make knuckles. But the teachers had all of the work to do. All math, I taught at night. I taught it in the daytime because there was nobody over me, and I was a young lady. Didn't know too much about the work, but I knew what I learned, and I tried to teach it to the children. And then we had a basketball team there, and we played basketball right up here in Lufkin. And when one person got hurt, I didn't have anybody to put in, I'd take my shoes off and stock it, and then I'd play We had people that turned out to be teachers and taught, and teachers that didn't have much learning. They could teach them more to the children that had all been to college and had all the learning, because they knew what they wanted to do, and they gave it, try to give it to the children.
When you left here, you went to Stamps and taught school in Stamps?
Yes, I taught one grade here. And then I got out, and the money that I had saved out of the $75, I went to school that next year and finished.
At Texas College.
And
how many students did you teach in Stamps? Did you have a principal or other classrooms?
Well, half the time the children were cotton picking time. They had to be out picking cotton, chopping cotton time. They had to be out chopping cotton. They were farmers there. So it was the same. Some of the same work that we did in Arkansas and Stamps, we did it in Texas. The same work. And some people would rather take their children out of school, put them in the field, than to let them go to school. They didn't want to, but they kind of had to. They had so many children. But those kids made good teachers. Those that had a hard time and just in school sometimes, they made good teachers, conscientious teachers, teachers that were interested in the children, in what the children had to teach their children. But today, our teachers are like some of our parents. I didn't go to school to learn to do this. He doesn't have to go to school to learn it. Let him get out and pick up to make some money. And it's not the child's fault that he's in the world. It's your fault.
Yes.
And it's your fault to give him an education. And tomorrow, we're going to have to have education in Macon.
Yes.
We can't do laundry work like my mother did with a washboard. going to have to go to school to learn how to use the washing machine and the ironing machine and all small articles. Going to have trained children, trained people to use.
Yes.
Let your child go to school, talk to the parents, and send those kids to school to learn, to be obedient, to be loving. We think we have love in school. We don't have it. I was a CME, but I'm Catholic man, and we go to mass, and now Catholics have a big shake-up. We don't know what's going to come. And we can't turn things off and turn them on now like we can machinery. We have to go down into your body, into your heart, and get something out of there to see what to do with these boys and girls. They don't know what to do. They don't want to go to school. I don't know what tomorrow's going to be like with all of them out of school. See them at night, you go places, they all ganged up in gangs on corners. And sometimes it's dangerous to pass them. Your children and my children, white and black. And who are you going to blame? You can't blame nobody but yourself.
Yes.
You've got to have love yourself. Not love for the whites and love for the blacks. You've got to have love for everybody.
That's right.
When I came here and in here and saw these little children hugging their white ladies, I wondered if that was their teachers that they were hugging. I wondered, well, this must be something like an elementary and that's what we need. We need somebody who's got to find what color my skin is.
That's right.
This white doesn't rub off.
That's right.
So I want you to think about you got to love for them to love.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about playing love. And you get a certain age, and first thing you know, you got children, and without marriage. You're going to have to love and forget about all of this
love. Yes. I don't ask about square dancing.
Elma said you taught square dancing also.
Yes, I taught square dancing when I went to Purdue.
Yeah, that's what she said. When she went to Purdue, she learned that. How long did you go to Purdue?
Just 1 year.
Just 1 year.
And I had to take in all I could take in while I was getting it.
Our lives are very parallel, and you see that I attended Purdue also, finished with the class of 53. We both grew up at the house of Will Ingram. We also paved across in many other ways. I think we think along the same line. Some of the stories you mentioned about your mother and her lottery ability. Tell the story about Daddy and their little argument that they had. I thought this was a humorous story. Your mother's mother had passed away.
Yes, she had, they called it now tuberculosis, but she had consumption.
Yeah.
And before she passed, she had her mother that lived out in Bladewater, Texas, about 10, 12 miles out of downtown Bladewater. She had to go leave those children. They had 9 boys and 4 girls. One family, 9 boys and 4 girls. And then when they would get in a wagon and drive maybe around 15 miles to the tower to get groceries or whatnot, had to leave the children alone. Well, my mother was taught housekeeping by her mother. She lived in Tower when she was coming up. And she taught her daughter just how to keep house and everything, my mother. When her mother died, that left my mother to have to go to her grandmother with these 9 boys and 5 girls, or 4 girls. And these boys didn't know anything about keeping a dresser clean, keep things stacked right nicely, books stacked nicely. And I came down to see him. I was teaching in Stanford. And I'd bring my mother down because they were close buddies when they were growing up. And my uncle wanted me to go and see about a cousin of his in Gollins, it's out from Houston, out on the lake, out on the ocean.
Galveston.
Yes.
Uncle Willie.
Yeah. He wanted to see about it, wanted to know about it. And asked me if I thought I could drive there. I said, I think so. So I got the kids that are around there. We went on, and when I came back, well, my mama and my uncle were like that, angry with each other. And when I got in and found out what was the cause of it, Uncle Willie told his share, and my mama told her side, and my uncle said, Lizzie ordered the dresser kept spotless and everything in its place. And I went there and moved something. Now they were buds. She was loving to Uncle Willie and he was loving to her. They were very close. Well, the other brothers were not his sisters. Well, he said, they were fussing and he said, and I got in and asked him what was. I said, well, what about it? He said, you see this hand? I can't do some things. Now, not my hand.
Industries also. I was telling you how old Aaron.
Yeah.
100-year celebration, too. Would you change your life if you could? What would you change? If you could change what has happened in your life for the 95 years, and I made an error there, it's 96.
I would change it for a man in the family. No woman got no business trying to rear their children. Thinking that maybe the man a stranger. When she, if you call a man, marry and let him take care of your children. Your children, mothers rear children and they have pigs in the family, and then that makes the family separate. I just know it from my own family. My mother had her pigs, and that brother was older, and I'm the next middle, I'm the middle there, and my sister's the little there. My brother's the big bear. And he should have done big bear work. But he didn't. Because my mother didn't make him do it. My sister and I did it. We cut wood. We picked up chips. I picked up chips where there were no chips. I don't know, just you're made to marry when you get an age, marry. If you do, they'll teach the children something. They can love a father like they can love a mother.
Yes.
And a father can take care of a child like the mother can. I would always say that's one thing they should be. Get married and have a family. Educate those children. Don't let those children grow up like you let a pig grow up in a pen, a cat to grow up in a house. Better have a cat. I have 17.
That's another story. Tell the story of your mother with the cats. How she would go through the community. Take the person back to
her. Well, my mother loved cats because she didn't have anybody love but children. She could tell a cat what to do. And if she tell a child what to do, and the child go off, and the mother goes off and come back, they didn't do it. And you know you're going to get it.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it. So the cat will do what he's told it to. And then it has a tone cat. And I don't know what you call it, but when nobody was around, you know, on my cane, my cat come and kiss the cane. They got to play with the cane or smell the cane. And this cat did the same identical thing. My niece was with me. He didn't go to her. He came to me because I had the cane. And he stayed right there with me. And when Betty fixed the bed, I was sitting there. And he came and tried to be lovable to me. The cat did. And then when Betty came in, he disappeared. So,
someone asked for you to tell about the daycare center that you got started there in Stans.
Oh, yes. After I retired, a friend of mine and I started a daycare center because Stans wasn't growing any. Didn't seem to be growing any. And we didn't have any good organization there that would stay. Anytime. Just soon as money get piled up somewhere, someone that takes the treasure would always take the money and disappear with it or something to get rid of us gold. So naturally, all you do, I'll just quit. But what we are supposed to do, stay with it and help people. But we weren't doing any help. When the money disappeared, we quit. But then later, there's so many children came up, and the government was helping families with children. And we thought we could get a little help there, which also, and we started it. We went back to the daycare center, and by the way, it's still going.
Tell the name of it.
Tell the name of the daycare center.
I can't think of the name.
Kitty College.
Can you? Kitty College.
Kitty College.
Kitty College. I think we have about 18 children in the family. all get together and decide what they're gonna do to raise our money. And I said, let's have pick up beer cans and pop cans, and we can get a little money for that. And they still using it, that can, selling cans for daycare children. And these children are getting more things now since they were in with the daycare center. When they get into high school, public school, that helps them go on with them. They the teachers that we need money, they the gas bill that we need.
Also, you know, they need a portion of land for a park there.
Well,
we can buy the
national parks there. And I've given about 3 acres. I haven't given it to them. But it's there until 99 years. I can, if they get on my nerve too much, I can get rid of it. I didn't pay the money for it. I let them use it. And I'm sorry I did it. I've learned. They used to say, Miss Gallagher's house, you better be quiet when you go. And Miss Gallagher said that. But now I have a plum tree. Nice big plums. And they start before the plums get ripe. Before they even quit growing, they start. And I can be out maybe raking the yard or during some flowers or something. And very quiet. And they start getting over there. I have a cyclone fence all around the house. And they'll get over the fence. And I'll look, hear the noise, and look up, what are you doing in that tree? Getting plums. Well, get out of it. And you can't get, and don't get on this fence. Go around to the gate.